Ladies and gentlemen, we are fortunate to have with us today the Honorable Hubert Humphrey, member of the United States Senate. Senator Humphrey, who represents Minnesota, is the majority whip of the Senate. Senator Humphrey, it's for you.
Thank you. Mr. Cottier and members of the World Conference of Local Governments and distinguished participants in this morning's proceedings, and our friends and visitors and neighbors that have honored the United States and honored in particularly our nation's capital by your presence here this morning, I want to extend to you from the Congress of the United States, at least from the United States Senate, a most cordial and hearty welcome. We're delighted that you can be with us. And might I add, we're very happy that our own local officials from the many cities and villages and counties and states of the United States can be with us too. So this pleasant admixture of representatives from abroad, as well as local government representatives from our own America, it seems to me makes a very happy occasion. Now, Mr. Cottier, I'm sure you know that my presence here this morning was one of these spontaneous, unplanned acts of American diplomacy. This is really grassroots diplomacy. I was given the privilege of knowing somewhere around 9 o'clock this morning that I was to be here. At that moment, I was in conference with the majority leader of the United States Senate and members of certain committees in that body. And I was told by my efficient secretary that as of last evening, it had been determined that Senator Humphrey would be privileged to address this conference. I readily accepted that opportunity because I am a local government official at heart. I once served as the mayor of one of our fine cities in the United States, the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, a city of over 500,000 people, a city that has all of the problems and challenges and all of the many exciting opportunities that other cities have throughout this nation and throughout the world. So when I see a mayor or a councilman or a local government official, I sort of feel, first of all, a sympathy for him. Secondly, I feel a sort of happy understanding of his predicament. And then I feel a kinship, a friendship that goes far beyond what executives at higher levels of government could ever possibly feel, with the exception, of course, of our president, who has given to you his message of greetings this morning. Mr. Cottier, I know that our president is very regretful that he was unable to be with you, but you understand the circumstances. I know that a representative of the president has been here to bring his message. I know that the chairman of our District of Columbia commissioners, my good friend Mr. Tobriner, has brought you a message. And without any more of the formalities or courtesies, let me just get on into what I want to say. And I'm going to visit with you now as a local official, as a citizen, as one has been working with some of the very same problems that you have been working with. And I make no differentiation. I make no difference here in my comments for my fellow American local officials or local representatives and those that come from other parts of the world. We're one family. We all have the same headache on occasion. We all have the same problems, at least in degree. The first thing I want to say is that there is no single group of public officials that have greater responsibility for the welfare and the well-being of the overwhelming majority of the population of this earth than those who are privileged to hold local public office and to conduct local public responsibility or public service. If this is going to be a better world, if there's going to be a better standard of living, if there is to be some relief from human suffering, some better opportunity for the young, better security for the aged, better health care for the sick, better education for our young people, it will be primarily because the local public officials who are close to the people have insisted upon it, have given leadership for these things, and have called upon their central governments as well as their local citizenry to mobilize the resources that are available for a better life for the people of the world. It's in your hands, and I think you know it. We in the United States can learn a great deal from our friends that are here today from overseas. We're a young country in many ways. I always hope that we'll be young of heart, young of spirit, vital, willing to try new things, to experiment, unafraid. The one characteristic that I want to see in free people today is that characteristic of being unafraid, the removal of fear, being willing to face up to the problems, whatever they are, and to do it with sort of a smile on our face, a sense of confidence. But we can learn a great deal from our friends today, fellow Americans. Why, some of the officials here from the better than 50 countries represented in this conference, some of these officials represent communities where there's been local government for hundreds of years. The cities of Europe, of Asia, yes, and some of our sister cities in Latin America, Africa, there's been an experience of local government that is rich, that is informative, if we'll only seek to learn. And I'm going to ask my fellow Americans to be humble, to recognize that while we've done many great things, we haven't done it all. There is so much that we can learn from others. And this is why I believe that these conferences are important. We get a chance to know each other not by the written word, not by the document or the publication of our association, but we get to know each other by personal contact. We can talk out the problems. We can ask each other how we are meeting these problems in our respective communities. For example, I am not at all sure how the traffic problem is in Geneva, but let me tell you, it's bad in every place in the United States. And I have a feeling that all over at least the industrialized part of the world, where mass transportation and automobile transportation is the common pattern, that traffic problems are here with us. It doesn't make much difference what language you speak or where you come from. It's hard to find a place to park the car. And I'll bet you that every local official has a problem of what we call public transportation. The citizens think the rates are too high. The local officials think the service is not good enough. And the constituents are angry with both. So traffic problems are a familiar problem for us. We have problems of air pollution. We have problems of municipal revenues, I gather. I understand, Mr. Trebriner, you even have some problems in the District of Columbia of municipal revenues. The lack of adequate financial resources. We have problems of recreation. Why, here the other day in the Congress, a few of us that have been local officials tried to get the Congress in the housing program to set aside a certain amount of what we call open spaces in the city planning. That as we plan for the new suburbs, as we plan for the growth and the development of our cities, we ask that money be allocated, money be set aside, not only to clean out the slums, but to buy up early, before the real estate speculators got a hold of it. To buy up early open spaces for so that people who live in these areas of concrete and asphalt, where brick and mortar is the scenery, that the children of tomorrow would have parks and recreation, would have open spaces where they could see a stream of water, green grass, maybe breathe some fresh air. Now, just to show you how old-fashioned we are around here, we didn't succeed in that effort. No, we still have people who feel that the way you build a city is to put buildings as close together as you can get them. The way that you build a city is to build it with concrete and mortar and steel. I say that the way you build a city is to make it a suitable environment for people. The person is the important object. And then you frame around the people the kind of a community that you would like for that individual to live in, to grow in. Oh, how I wish that our city planning of tomorrow would be centered not around merely the economics of real estate, not merely around the so-called convenience of industry, but let us have as a prime purpose the building of our cities and our towns and our villages as a suitable environment for the development and the enlightenment and the enrichment of God's greatest creation, the human being. Seems to me that's what we need. So today, recreation, health, education, transportation, all of this becomes a common problem. I care not whether you're from Brazil or France, or whether you're from India or Japan, or whether you're from the United States or from Mexico. It makes no difference, my friends. Cities are cities. They are all noisy. They're all far too dirty. They all have far too many problems of what we call social order, policing. They're all crowded. They all offer a tremendous challenge to the ingenuity, the intelligence of the citizenry and of the local officials. Now, in my concluding remarks this morning, just let me say this. I now want to speak primarily to my fellow Americans. I have long been interested in what we call the diplomacy of people to people. I recognize that I'm speaking in the auditorium of our State Department. This is a fine auditorium, better than anything we have over in the Congress, may I add. Of course, there's always that jealousy between the legislative branch and the executive. If somebody will tell me someday why legislators are unwilling to do for themselves what they're willing to do for the executives, I'd be very happy to know. But anyway, I approve of this auditorium. I want that quite clear. But I do want everyone to share this thought with me. The government of the United States is not just the government in Washington. The government of the United States is the government of the thousands and thousands of local jurisdictions of government the districts, the villages, the towns, the cities, the counties, and the 50 states, and then the national government, the federal government. This is a government of limited powers. And above all, may I add that all of the government, the totality of our government, local, state, and federal, does not represent, even then, the society that is ours. Because we believe in the doctrine of popular sovereignty. We believe in the power of the people. In the people is vested the legal power, the economic power, the political power of this republic. And this is essentially true in every free society. So when we hear people talk about what the government of the United States is doing, don't think for a minute that this is all that the United States is doing. Because the government of the United States is like the cap of an iceberg, visible from afar, often very formidable. But its real strength is the base that all too often is unseen, or at least to which far little too attention is given. The base of state and local government, and then under that, the real underpinning of a viable, strong, healthy society. And the only way that I know to make our government better is to see to it that the lot or the well-being of the individual citizen is better. The only way that I know for America to have a real voice in this world that will be listened to and heard is to have that voice be the voice of a good conscience, of a clear and clean mind, of a strong and good heart. And this is why some of us have said that America's image to the world, or our picture before the world, is not merely the picture or the image of Washington, D.C., but it is the image and the reflection of the work and the deeds of every local official, every local community, and every citizen. And this United States Senator has said repeatedly, and I repeat it here this morning, that whenever an injustice is committed in any locality by any citizen or permitted by any local official, whenever there is a denial of human rights or an abuse of civil liberties, or whenever there is a denial of opportunity, then I say that the United States of America suffers and is weakened, not only at home but throughout the world. The best thing that this country can do for humanity is to set a good example. And my friends from overseas, my friends from other lands, you can help us. You too must set a good example. And you too must ask us to live by high standards, and we to ask you. This is a mutual cooperative effort. I don't want America to stand on the high plateau looking out as if somehow or another we were a superior people, because we're not. I want my America to be a partner in the common enterprise of extending the areas of freedom and of building a society in which humankind can live a better life. I want to be a cooperator, not a dominator. I want us to share, and I want you to share with us. And may I say that we both have so much to give to one another. There is so much that we can learn. I say very frankly that it is impossible for a free country where we have representative government to have a strong and an effective program of mutual cooperation, an effective foreign policy, unless the people share in it. unless the people know what it means and unless the people have an understanding of the world in which they live. And my friends of local government, there is so much that you can do in this city-to-city program, this sister city program. There is so much that we can do by people-to-people contacts, the cultural exchanges, families being brought together. Not just Americans going to your country, but you coming to our country. There is so much that we can do in our schools to teach our young people today that this is one world, and it's getting smaller by the hour. More interdependent, more interrelated. There is so much that we need to know of one another. I'm sure that my friends from other parts of the world are perplexed when they read the American newspaper about American politicians. May I add that some of our own people are too. I'm sure you must be perplexed when you know, for example, that a political party in power in this country can have several voices of expressing different points of view. A president who speaks for the nation, to be sure, but also a congressman or a senator who exercises independence of judgment, even though he may be of the same political party. Very difficult for people who have what we call the parliamentary structure of government to understand that. Therefore, what do we need to do? Not criticize, not jump to quick conclusions, but what we need to do is to understand. What we need is not merely information. We can get that all over. What we need is understanding. And this requires the intimacy of personal contact. Now, I therefore urge upon each and every one of you to make it your business to help build in this world today a better understanding of the part of the world that is yours, a better understanding for someone else of your city, a better understanding of some other country for your country, a better understanding of your economic, your political, your social, your religious institutions. This is the only way, my friends. Isn't it interesting? Scientists share knowledge. Oh, the scientist spends time, unbelievable amounts of time, trying to find out what other scientists are doing. There is a community of knowledge. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars to translate scientific documents so our scientists can know about your scientists and your scientists can know about our scientists. Maybe this is why we've had such a phenomenal advance in science and technology. Maybe this is why we will get to the moon and come back. But may I suggest, my dear friends, that unless we spend a little more time getting acquainted, a little more time in searching for understanding, a little more effort made to try to adjust our differences, the trip that we take to the moon may be the reason that you're going there is because you can't stand to live on Earth any longer. I appeal, therefore, to those who are the political leaders to do what a political leader is required to do, to understand the people, to represent the people, to give leadership to the people, to sense their hopes and their aspirations. And it can't be done just by the Secretary of State. And it can't be done, my fellow Americans, just by massive doses of American money. That isn't the answer at all. That helps. But the answer is much deeper. And so this morning I appeal to my friends here in this conference to join together as one mighty family, or could we put it in more militant terms, as one mighty army in the war against man's ancient enemies. And these enemies have been with us for the centuries. And by the way, it's these enemies that I'm about to refer to that represent the allies of tyranny and that represent the common threat to humanity everywhere in the world. These enemies have been known since the beginning of time. The enemies of poverty, which grips vast areas of the world. The enemy of sickness, illness, poor health, that afflicts over 70% of humanity. The enemy of hunger that gnaws away at the very physical and spiritual being of people. And the corrupting and corroding enemy of ignorance, illiteracy, which breeds passion and fear and hatred and bigotry and all of the evils that sap our vitality and our strength. These are the common enemies, and I care not the color of your skin, the faith that is yours, the country from whence you come. And I care not, may I say, the size of your community or of your country. What we need is a common allegiance to a coordinated program on the part of humanity to strike body blows, hammer, sledgehammer blows against these ancient, old, and vicious enemies. And I submit that we can do something about it. I'm a man that is optimistic of the future. I do not think that the revolution that is sweeping this world today is a communist revolution. I don't think that it is a revolution that will end in tyranny. I think that the revolution that is sweeping the world today, of which you're so aware, is a revolution against the intolerable conditions of the past. I think this is a revolution that is really one that is sweeping up the peoples of the world to lift them to a higher ground so that they can have a new life. And I appeal to those who love freedom to join that revolution, to guide it, to ensure its success, and not in any way to try to stand in its way. Because to try to stand in its way will mean that you will be rolled over. This revolution needs direction, and above all, it needs sympathetic understanding. And I say to my fellow Americans, we of this world, this modern world, we have it within our means this morning, as of now, if we would but put forth the effort to remove from the face of the earth famine and starvation. Never again need a human being ever be the victim of famine if mankind would but put himself to the task of the production and the distribution of food and fiber, which is ever so abundant in this world. We can stop it. And why is it we can't become sufficiently aroused over this? Why is it that we are so excited about a man in orbit, and yet we have so little concern about a man in the depths of depravity, the depths of despair, as he lies there in his misery? I call upon my fellow Americans to have this century be known as the century of man's enlightenment. I do not want the United States of America known only as a nation that produced great weapons, or as a nation that was known as the richest of its time. I want America to be known as the nation of the healer, of the teacher, of the provider, of the food and the fiber to clothe the naked and to feed the hungry. And I say that if people who love people will make up their mind that these ancient enemies of hunger and disease, of poverty and ignorance, that these ancient enemies can be defeated, if we'll understand that these are the real enemies of humanity, these are the real allies of despotism and tyranny. If we'll understand that, my friends, we will have gained a new sense of living and a new appreciation of the wonders of this world, which will bring us to what we call that pursuit of happiness, that life that is better for people. Now, I want to express to you my thanks for your willingness to listen to me. It's been a joy to be with you, and I believe that the words that I have said here this morning represent in a very large measure the spirit, the heart of the millions and millions of people that make up this great nation of ours, the workers, the farmers, the businessmen, the teachers, the housewives, the children, just the people. Because make no mistake about it, in this good land of ours today, the spirit of the people is good and it's strong. And there is a desire on the part of the people of this United States to work hand in hand, side by side, shoulder to shoulder, with people who desire to improve the lot of their fellow man, people who seek social and economic and political reform. And if we can get this common understanding out of meetings such as this, then I want to tell you that a better day is in the offing. Thank you very much.
On behalf of all of us, I express sincere appreciation for your appearance here today. We are especially grateful that Senator Humphrey, with his many tasks and duties of national importance, has found the time to be here this morning to address us. I can assure him that we appreciate this very much and that his message has a very special significance for our conference.